This is Bev.
And this is Diz.
And this is
Trigger Warning.
Diz, you have a story for us.
I have got a story for you guys.
What you got?
This is a true crime.
Oh boy.
And as with most true crime, it involves death. And it does involve child death, but we don't go into anything.
Okay,
but just
no details.
Just so everyone is kind of aware of that. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of detail in that. It's just a fact. Of things that occurred. Yeah.
Okay.
So, guys, today we are going to talk about the worst unsolved mass murder in the state of Alaska.
What?
Dun, dun, dun.
Mass murder?
A mass murder. The worst unsolved one.
Love an unsolved case, not...
It's... Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about what we think.
I love it when it wraps up in a pretty bow at the end and you're like, yay, story's done.
There is no bow.
There's no bow.
And this is all the way back in 1982.
Oh, I guess there's... Well, there could still be a bow one day.
But... Possibly, but I don't know.
Well, and it's funny that you're doing a story from Alaska.
Oh, tell me why.
Because, did that sound rehearsed? It shouldn't have, because it wasn't. because I am going to be, my next episode is the hauntings of Alaska. It's our next state.
Ooh.
In, you know, the states. So, this will come out on Wednesday, and then that following Sunday... The Hauntings of Alaska will come out.
How fantastic.
And we did not plan that.
We did not plan that.
We're just on the same wavelength, I guess.
We are just that darn good.
We are. We're sisters in sync.
Sisters in sync.
Yeah, that could be.
Sis.
Part of a band name, it seems like.
Sis. Sisters in sync.
Oh my gosh.
What?
Oh my gosh. I think we have to copyright that.
I think we should.
Okay,
so let's get started. Okay, so look, we're going to be Labor Day weekend, 1982. We're in Alaska.
I was a very wee child.
I was as well. Mm-hmm. Very wee. We're in the final days of the commercial fishing season.
Because, okay.
You know, Alaska.
Yeah.
Fishing is their main thing in any port area.
Right.
So we're in a small fishing village called Craig, Alaska, and the population at that time, it's about 600 people.
Oh, wow.
But this is
everybody
Alaska.
Everybody knows everybody.
Right, exactly. So there is a fishing ship called the Casino. It's been docked in the little area in the village, and it starts to head out into a small cove near a place called Fish Egg Island. It's about a mile or just over a mile away from the docks and the little village itself. So they're on their way to assist another ship that has been anchored out in the little cove area. And this other ship is called the Investor. And it's like bougie, fancy smanshy, teched out fishing boat. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So, they're
it's
going
like
to
fish
go.
Fish is using iPods and stuff.
It's so fancy.
I'm just kidding. iPods are old.
It's like the Cadillac of fishing boats.
Oh, cool.
Especially okay. At this time.
Is Cadillac still bougie? Considered bougie? I guess so. Like,
I mean,
Escalade.
For
maybe.
Our age, yes.
Okay.
It's the Escalade. That's
it's not
probably...
like we're talking about a Ford Taurus or anything, but. Okay. I am sure, right. Mate.
So
sorry,
it's,
go ahead.
It's fancy, okay?
Okay,
it's really
fancy
nice. Uh-huh. Okay. So the Casino motors on out, is heading on out. They, on their way out, they speak to someone who's in like a little skiff, like a little tiny boat.
Mm-hmm.
Chat for a second.
Like a rowboat, kind
of? Sort of.
Oh, yeah.
I think it still has a motor,
oh,
but
okay.
It's just like a little, it's not a lifeboat, but
it's like a boat that goes from, like, when you dock a bigger boat, it goes from the big boat to the little, to the
yeah.
dock or whatever.
It's like the tender boat.
Yeah.
It tenders people to.
Tenders.
Yeah. That's
it's
what
like
it's called.
Little, it's an Uber boat.
It's an Uber. Oh my gosh.
From destination
okay.
to destination.
So they talk to that person and they're like, okay, have a great day. And they go on their way. So as they get closer to the Investor, they start calling out, hey, you know. What's up, guys? What's going on? They don't get a response. Nobody's out on deck, but it's like earlier in the morning, it's foggy. So it's like, okay, they might still be sleeping.
Right.
They don't hear anyone talking or anything. All they really hear is the water and some seagulls. So it's pretty quiet. So the crew of the casino boards the investor and they walk along. And so it's like a, it's just a fishing boat. Like, kind of like the one that Forrest Gump has.
Gotcha.
Okay. And so, because it even has, like, the tall rig, because it's got, like, the net that goes under that
right.
will, like, scoop up fish, and like, it's a legit fishing boat. The big,
yeah, cargo nets.
Yeah.
Or fishing nets.
So they start walking along, and they start to make their way below deck. And they're going in. Of course, it's dark. They're trying to see what's going on. They're looking around for people, calling out, no voices, nothing. And then they finally get their eyes adjusted to the darkness. And as they're walking through, they count 8 dead bodies.
Oh, geez.
So let's talk about who was on that ship. So this ship, like I said, was really fancy, and it was owned by a guy named Mark Coulthurst.
Okay.
Mark is the owner and the skipper. So he owns it, but he's also
the capitan.
In charge of it. Yes, he is the capitan. On the ship with him is his wife, who was pregnant with their third child.
Okay, this is a family affair then.
Their daughter, who is 5,
aww.
Who was going to be starting kindergarten that week, because this is Labor Day weekend.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. And then their son, who was 4.
Wow.
So we have Mark, his wife Irene, daughter Kimberly, and son John.
Okay, that's 4.
That's 4.
Uh-huh.
They have 4 crew members.
Okay.
Chris Heyman, who was 18. Jerome Keon, who was 19. Dean Moon, who was 19. And Mike Stewart, who was also 19.
Oh, wow. They're all young.
Yes. So, the night before this occurred, everyone on the ship had celebrated Mark's 28th birthday.
Mark wasn't even that old to own a big fancy fishing boat.
And have 3 children.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they had gone to a restaurant kind of in that little town and had gone back to the boat around 9:30.
Okay.
Okay. So they're from this little tiny town in called Blaine, Washington. And it's like got 2,200 people is that population. So it's a little bit bigger than Craig, yeah. but
it's
not
like
by much.
Big city compared to Craig, but.
And they had said that the winter before this, Mark had actually bought this boat. Okay. And he bought it for, let's see, $850,000, which is just over $2.7 million in today's money.
You did the exchange. I love the
I did,
exchange
cause,
rate.
Because you got to know.
Yeah.
Because that's what I would be focused on for like the next 5 minutes.
Right. So 1982 or 81 was when he bought it. $850,000.
Yes.
And it's worth how much today?
It would be 2.7. 2.716 something something million.
So 2.7
million. 2.7 million.
Okay. So it was a fancy fishing
and
boat.
It's like 58 feet long. It's a huge boat
to me
anyway.
Yeah.
Super high tech. Fancy schmance.
Hold a lot of fishes.
And it's called, I don't know exactly how to, it's, okay, I do know how to say it. It's called a seine.
Okay.
Which is actually spelled S-E-I-N-E.
Uh-huh.
But you say it like the word I'm sane or I'm insane.
Uh-huh.
And that just basically means it's a fishing
or
boat.
Or you know what I'm saying?
Not quite.
Okay.
A fishing boat that has a large net that gets dropped underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like basically saying a fishing boat. And this particular kind of net goes in and surrounds the fish. And I'm doing hand motions, guys, that you can't see, but Beverly can.
Yes.
It like comes up and cups around them like it.
Yeah, it traps them.
It surrounds them and captures them.
Yeah.
And that's what that means. So,
okay.
But anyway, it's a big boat. And they had just arrived that night, or that day, which would have been like September 5th.
So the day that they celebrated that night and everything.
They had just arrived and docked.
Okay.
So that's a little bit about the ship and the people that were found on board. Now we're going to talk about the crime itself. On the night of September 5th, 1982, the killer boards the investor, kills the 4 members of the Colthurst family and the four crew members using a pistol or a small bore rifle. Around 6 a.m. the next morning, which would have been Labor Day Monday, mm-hmm. September 6th, the killer takes the ship out to a quiet cove near the Fish Egg Island, mm-hmm. just about a mile outside of the town of Craig, and is out there for about 2 hours. Around 8 a.m., he takes the little skiff, the little ship, the little boat from the investor,
Uber boat,
and begins making his way back toward the port. He leaves the sea cocks open and is planning on letting the sea take care of the evidence by allowing the ship to sink.
Okay.
Sea cocks, I had to look that up.
Yeah.
Those are valves that are in the hull close to or slightly under the water line. Mm-hmm. And it's usually connected to the engine cooling system, so they can use it to cool the engine, but it can also just fill up the engine.
But if you just open it,
right. So that's what he did.
Okay, so he leaves it there hoping it'll sink before anybody
Correct.
Comes upon it.
So
Spoiler
he's
alert,
seen
somebody came upon it.
Going back and forth between the dock and the ship throughout this day. He doesn't just leave. He's seen on the little skiff going back and forth. He stays in the area of Craig, doesn't really go anywhere.
And people
stays
probably just thought
at
it was
night.
One of the normal boat hands.
Well, because
or something.
It's still the season, so there's still tons of people
right.
fishing and people yeah. that, so I say tons, but you know.
Yeah.
So he stays that night in the town of Craig. The next morning, September 7th, he sees that the investor has not sunk. So he uses the skiff again and returns to the ship and sets it on fire.
So he goes back after they discovered everybody.
But wait a second. This is
okay.
what's interesting. On his return trip to the docks, he stops and talks to two fishermen who saw the boat was on fire. I don't know if this is the people from the casino ship or not. I'm not sure exactly what the timeline is because I started researching. I'm like, oh, he talked to them. But then it was like, no, they didn't say that they spoke.
Right.
Right. So I'm not exactly sure.
Okay, so when they discovered the bodies, they were not burned already, or yes?
Well, in the initial thing that I was reading, said nothing about burned bodies.
Okay.
In this particular article I started, happened to start with.
Right.
And then as I continued to read more articles and everything, they were talking about burned bodies.
Well, after the coroner had gotten to them and they'd had autopsies and stuff, of course then everything else would be about burned bodies, but I wonder if they came across them before set it on fire.
So here's
then.
The thing. So he's like, okay, there's two fishermen on this boat that saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere else said that there were three. Whatever.
Okay.
He tells them, oh, hey, the people on board of the investor, they're fine. They're not in any danger. And he continues on to Craig, to Doc.
Okay.
Docks at the village, offers to lend the boat to other people if they want to get a closer look to the on-fire boat.
Everybody, okay, because it's a small town and it's something exciting going on.
And bystanders later say, well, we thought he was going to get help. We thought he was a crew member going to get help. Because they, of course, didn't hear what he said to the people on the fishing boat out on the water.
So they don't know there are people on the boat.
They're not really sure what's going on.
Yeah.
Plus, that boat had only been there for a couple of days at this point.
Right.
I don't know that they had been off the ship.
And it was the family,
other than
and
just
at the end of the summer, I guess they could have been just kind of chilling and
right.
like finishing up their Labor Day
and
weekend.
And with him celebrating his birthday, mm-hmm. that may have been the only time they were in the village.
Right, right.
I don't know.
Okay.
The mayor of Craig, whose name was Lee Axemaker, fantastic name.
Awesome name.
He later said that he saw the, quote, he saw the guy in the skiff, said he was a cool character. He came up, talked to a few people, made a phone call, and left, end quote.
So totally acting chill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Made a phone call. Payphone, I assume, because it's 1982.
Right, yeah.
Is chatting up people, guess offering the ship, the little skiff to people if they wanted.
Yeah, if you want to go see this boat on fire. Yeah.
Right?
Okay. I mean, I guess it's kind of like people rubbernecking in a car accident. Like, you kind of, part of you wants to see what happened. It's kind of a morbid curiosity, but so I guess in this small town, having a boat be on fire is kind of like, oh wow, check this out.
Right. And you know, hindsight, like we always say, is 20/20, and it's mm-hmm. easy to look at it now and be like, oh well, they, why wouldn't they question this? But when right. you're in that,
no, yeah, I mean,
and this is Alaska, people probably keep to themselves for the most part, yeah. depending on yeah. you know,
and fishing crews are kind of like, you know, we have rough work to do. Let's just go get the work done.
Right.
And, you know.
But you would think that they would be like, hey, man, what's going on? If they saw him coming from there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the mayor's like, I saw the guy. He was like, chill. He wasn't stressed. He was talking to people and he made a call and then he left and he was not seen again.
Okay.
And the investor, the ship burned for 42 hours. At one point, they said it was brought under control for a really short period of time, and investigators that, of course, had been called were able to get on board long enough to find four bodies in the galley area, and they saw that there were bullet holes in them. So that's saying the investigators found the bodies, not the two fishermen or whatever.
Right.
So I don't know about that. But they see bullet holes, they're like, well, this is murder. Something happened here. So, of course, the detectives and everything, they're keeping everyone away from the crime scene. But the fire actually reignites.
Oh.
It rekindles.
I'm sure there's a lot of stuff on board that's
flammable. And other fishermen and some other captains who were trying to help saw what was happening, like as far as the fire starting again. And they were like, hey, watch out, because that's starting again.
Mm-hmm.
And they were told, don't worry about it. Just leave it alone.
Oh.
Which is interesting as well.
Sus. Why would the investigators want to, like, have their crime scene?
And the investigators, they're, like, from the state police. Like, that's, it's not, like, a local law enforcement. Like, this is state police is here by now. So, the investor continues to burning all the body, all four of the other bodies. So they got four bodies off. Those four that they were able to find, they got those off the ship.
Okay. I guess maybe part of the ones that were in like a part closer to the unburned area or something.
And I'm thinking it's probably the crew members or something, but we'll also talk about that here in just a second.
Okay, wonderful.
So the investor finally starts burns down to the water line. So obviously the fire can't go any further once it's...
Right.
Yeah. Maybe on the very inside. And the detectives, investigators, crime scene people, they begin to sift through 2 tons of soggy ashes with a fine mesh screen. They were able to find 1 tooth and 10 pounds of human bone fragments.
Oh my God.
That's what they found.
So they've been cremated, essentially, because it burned for so long.
So, those first four bodies that they found, they were able to identify them. It was Mark, Irene, Kimberly, and then the crew member, Michael Stewart.
Okay.
He was actually a sophomore at Washington State University, and he was Mark's cousin.
Okay.
So, he was actually a family member.
Oh, wow.
Michael Stewart. They were later able to identify one more body, so body number 5, and this was Jerome Keon, I think is how he said it. He was an honor student at Seattle University, and he was also from Blaine, Washington, where they were from. And then the final 3 bodies were burned so badly, they are presumed to be...
The other 2 crew members and then their
little boy. And their little boy, which I would assume... He's small. He is 4, so that would be... But yeah, so Dean Moon, he was a former Blaine High School football star, so he was from Blaine. And then Chris Heyman, he actually would have turned 18 on the day of the fire.
That is sad.
So the day when he was killed, he was still 17.
Oh, man.
Right? And then, of course, their son, John.
Who you said
who
was
4.
Ugh. Who could do that to little kids?
It's just... And 8 people.
Yeah.
8. Yeah. It's one thing if you're like, we don't like this guy, Mark, you know?
Right. It's still not good, obviously, but...
It's like, what? Well, it just doesn't make sense anyway, because we're not going to go out and murder people, but...
Yeah.
It just...
I guess it's better that we don't understand it, because yeah, that means we're not thinking about
it. We always want to know the why, because it helps us make some sense of the world.
Especially when it's little kids and stuff that, you know, pose no threat.
Right. So. Little kids. It's not like it's even teenagers that could, like, fight back or something.
Right.
Well, and also he did it in the middle of the night. So they're all probably asleep. Maybe... Yeah. They're probably all asleep.
Probably.
Anyway. All right. So now we're going to talk about the investigation itself.
Okay.
So the Alaska State Troopers have already descended upon Craig. Mm-hmm. And they even go to Blaine Washington, which makes sense. Because they're trying to figure out what is the motive for killing this family and these four crew members.
Like we were just talking about. Right? Why would you kill these little kids and like all these other
so
people too?
So they look in Craig and of course they go back to where they're from. Mm-hmm. To see what's going on. Okay.
So all of them basically knew each other. Was Chris Hayward, you said he was getting ready to turn 18.
Yeah. So
was he from Blaine, Washington as well?
They didn't say. They actually did not say exactly where he was from, which I found kind of strange. Yeah. But looks like everyone else
but he
was from.
So he could have been a local or he could have come with them from Seattle or not Seattle, but near Seattle, Washington.
Well, and because... The cousin went to Washington State University, and the next person was Jerome, and he was a student at Seattle University.
Right, okay.
But he was actually from Blaine.
Yeah, okay.
So the investigation. So they're like, okay, what could be the reasoning here? So first they're like, drug trafficking, maybe?
Okay, yeah.
But they ruled that out because they were talking to family members and colleagues, and it just didn't make sense. Right. Because
usually there'd be signs like financially or something, or
and it's like
or somebody
a family
using drugs that it would be obvious that they were involved in something like that.
And everyone's like, absolutely not,
and especially not with the two little kids there,
which would be insane.
Like, what would happen if they stumbled into, you know, a stash? Like, that's I don't see that. But,
yeah, that would be really irresponsible parenting.
Obviously didn't know them. I was three, but three and on the other side of the country, but whatever.
So then they were like, okay, probably not drug trafficking. What about robbery? What if someone just wanted to rob them? Because it's a nice boat.
True, yeah.
But then they're like...
it's still a fishing boat.
They don't usually have a lot of cash. Like, they might have money with them, but it's not like they're going to have a ton of money. Yeah.
I'm assuming with, like, deep sea fishermen, if it's like that, that they kind of... get all their supplies together and they're out on the water for a while.
Yeah, and with having a family, you know, they're going to have a lot of stuff with, I would assume, having two kids and a pregnant woman with them.
Yeah. I don't see them having a lot of, like, yes, the boat was nice and everything.
But not a lot of, like, jewelry.
That's because
cash,
it was,
sure.
Yeah. Yeah, there was no reason to have fancy stuff out there that could get lost or washed.
I mean, the ship was worth more than
damaged.
Anything else.
Yeah. And that was because it was the main portion of the fishing.
So I'm thinking they were thinking if it was robbery, it would be like a well, check that out. Like,
let's go see what they
let's
got.
Go see.
Yeah.
But they're like, the killer really knew what they were doing as far as using the boat and like going out into the cove and all that.
Yeah.
So
I
they're like,
no,
they don't think it was
not
robbery.
Boats. Yeah.
Okay.
Knew the layout of the boat if nobody had gotten away and nobody. I mean, and they walked around at night in the boat, and they obviously knew their way around.
Well, and then they were like, okay, so chances are no one tried to rob them. What if one of the crew members just went crazy? What if they were just berserk and killed everyone, and then they were like, oh, wait, better set it on fire so I can get rid of the evidence.
Okay.
And they were like, well, you know, all the bodies, they couldn't actually identify them.
Right.
The last two crew members are presumed to be those two crew members.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The child probably would be easier to tell, most likely. It's him. But they're like, pretty much everyone liked them. People said he was a great captain, and they were a good family, and people liked them. I don't know if they had been there before. I don't know if this is something they did often, even like on another boat.
It sounds like if
I know he had other boats
because
we're
going to
talk about that in a second. Okay. But
if everybody's saying, "Oh, they're a great family," then well, that could be everybody back home. But
right,
I'm assuming.
Well, even in the village,
Because they recognized them.
Right.
And they don't live there, so obviously they've probably been around before.
Well, and the biggest thing is, you know, people did say that they saw the guy on that little boat, and none of the crew members matched the description of this guy.
Okay.
So let's talk about him.
Okay, let's do that.
So they said he was a white male, probably in his early 30s, about 5'10".
Okay.
Had straight brown hair. He had rectangular glasses.
Okay.
1982, baby.
Yeah, buddy.
And they said he had a pockmarked complexion.
Okay.
Like, maybe he used to have acne or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that's kind of like, you're going to remember if you see someone.
Pretty conspicuous, yeah.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, not just like some normal, hey, he had brown hair and he was 5'10".
And like people talk to him.
Average look. Yeah.
So, you know, they knew it wasn't anyone on the ship, that it couldn't have been someone because none of them looked like that.
Right.
Okay.
And they were all super young except Mark.
Yeah.
And he was positively identified. So.
Yes.
Because he was the only one close to being in his 30s that was male.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, one of the detectives from the state trooper, Detective Miller, he was like, okay, why would a killer set fire to the ship in daylight? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't he just wait for it to get dark again? And then use the dark, because then no one would be able to see him, blah, blah, blah.
Nobody would be able to see him leave, either.
Right? He's like, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. Although the, like, fire at night is more obvious, I guess.
Yeah, but it's like,
but fire in the daytime.
But you know what? He's already, like, talked to people, so it's not like he was trying
to
hide.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
He was just acting like he was supposed to be there. And
yeah.
That's ballsy. Yeah.
So he's like, well, maybe somebody was trying to kill someone and they got the wrong people. Like, maybe they got the wrong people and they were like, oh, shit. But they were like, we doubt that because that boat is nice and people knew.
Yeah. I mean, it has the name on the side. Like,
there's also, like, pictures of it, and it's real nice for 1982, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and they're like, that would be easily identifiable. They're going to know if they're going to be on that ship. Like,
right.
Sorry, I keep saying ship and boat because I'm not sure exactly what the proper term is for this.
I think it's fine.
It's probably a ship. Anyway. And they're like, okay, what else could it be? Like, what else? And they're like, okay, well, maybe this was a warning from the Alaskan fishermen telling the Washington fishermen, hey,
these
get the heck out of our waters.
Yeah.
These are our fish and our water. Get on. Because there's been tension between them for years and years.
Right.
And you're like, but this is really, really.
That would be an extreme.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Way to do it. So
yeah.
They're like, we don't believe that's it.
And that's only one fishing boat. And considering, yeah, it was a big boat, and I'm sure they could catch a lot. I don't know what a lot is.
Right.
But I'm assuming there are commercial fishing vessels that are even bigger that can
yeah.
catch even more.
Yeah.
So why pick on this one little
no,
family?
No, they would go for the big
boat.
Ones, for like the big companies and stuff.
Yeah. If they were going to do that to just sabotage or to send a message, that it seems like they'd send it to somebody who, you know, had a big company that was, you know, really making a way through there. And then,
yeah,
but one little family, it seems like that, even if they were successful, it seems like it's a lot.
It wouldn't have touched anything compared to like a big company.
Right.
So like, no, that doesn't make sense either. So like, this must have just been an isolated incident. It just happened. It wouldn't happen again. And that's kind of what they're thinking.
Wow. Okay.
So at this time, they do develop a prime suspect.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So let's talk about him for a second.
All right. Are we going to judge him?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this guy's name was John Kenneth Peel.
Okay.
He was 22 years old at the time the murders took place.
Okay.
He's
not old enough
they
to be the guy
they arrested him.
Oh.
2 years later. So he was 24 by that time for the murders.
Okay.
And the authorities, when they arrested him, said that he was implicated by physical and circumstantial evidence, and that he had been ID'd by 4 witnesses as the man seen on the skiff.
So this is the same guy that's supposedly the 30-something-year-old pockmarked guy?
Yes. But he's 22.
Although, I guess if you had some scarring and stuff on your face, it might make you look older, and then being in the sun causes wrinkles and, you know.
I guess, and if he's
so
on the water
possible.
A lot. But
yeah.
But still. Yeah. Well, no, not in 30s. They said he was in his 20s. Oh, okay. That's what they said about the suspect.
Oh, okay. I thought you said 20s. Early 30s or something. Okay. Mm-mm. All right. My bad. Sorry.
Of course, his family and friends are like, he's a great guy. He's really mm-hmm. good natured. He walks away from fights like he's not one to start things. But then they continued to check into him, and there were different thoughts and descriptions of him.
Okay.
One of the relatives of one of the victims said that Peel was a drinker, he used drugs, and that he had been fired from Mark's boat the year before the murders occurred.
Oh.
So Mark did have other boat, and apparently this John guy worked for him. Other fishermen
and
said...
And this guy would have definitely known whose boat it was.
And all about it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he wasn't there... Well, he got it the winter before, so I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. But still, he would have known...
He would know who
if
just Mark was.
If his former boss who fired him was on this big, expensive boat
right.
now.
Yeah. Other fishermen said that Peel had landed a job on another boat and was... He was there. Mm-hmm. I think he was in Craig on the other... Some of the other fishing ships. Like, he had landed a job on one of those.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And it was called the Lily 8.
Okay.
And,
I guess everybody was just kind of at this area now because it's the end of the season.
I guess yeah. so. Because he got that job in 1982, but they didn't specify like a certain time.
Okay.
And they said he had tried to get back on with Mark and his boat, the investor.
Uh-huh.
But Mark was like, no, you're not coming back.
And do we know why he was fired?
We're going to talk about this.
Okay, I will stop asking
that's okay.
questions. Or maybe I won't. Maybe this is prompting and
don't.
It's called a segue.
That's right. You're segueing me real good.
Yeah.
So they did say that the Lily 8 was older and rougher shape. And this is when they were like, it's like the investor was a Cadillac. Because in 1982, that was a fancy car.
Yeah. Fancy.
Especially in this region. Like, it's Alaska. There's...
Right.
Yeah. So... They're like, dude, like, he has motive. Yeah,
he was fired. He's got a job,
four
yes.
Four people
but it's
said
not
that he
same...
was the one on that little boat going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Okay. So now, they were also talking to Mark's youngest sister. Her name was Lori. And she said that, obviously she found out they arrested Peel.
Mm-hmm.
And she said he used to date their other sister, which I think was older than her. Well, she was the youngest. I don't know if she was, he was... I don't know if she, the sister, was older than Mark. Like, it was sister and then Mark and whatever, but
right.
they had another sister. And he dated her. Peel
okay.
dated her. So he must have been from Blaine, Washington.
Yeah.
Or wherever they're actually from.
Right.
I don't know if that
he,
was actually
yeah.
their hometown when they were growing up.
Right, yeah.
And he said that Peel's mother had even made their sister's wedding cake. So, like, they knew him.
To marry Peel? Or
no,
when she got married later?
When she got married.
Okay. So she was still close with his family, too. So I bet he did grow
right?
up with them then.
Right? Okay. So, Peel. He's tried twice for the murders. First trial was in 1984.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Hung jury.
Okay.
Second trial, 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Not guilty.
Okay.
Another detective that was working the case, they were asked him about it later, and especially about Peel and the court stuff
and
all that drama. And he said, quote, just because someone is acquitted doesn't mean they're innocent. It just means there's not enough evidence to show guilt beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yep.
And interestingly, Peel later filed a wrongful prosecution suit against the state of Alaska and won, and reportedly was awarded around $900,000. And that's really all I have. Because a lot of it is just, you know, it took 4 years to, for the trials.
Right.
For him.
Yeah, it was like 2 years till the second one, or the first one was the year he was arrested, and then 2 years.
Yeah, and it's like, well, and I don't know if the person I saw in some of the research was him. Of course, he doesn't look super pockmarked now, but he's also older.
Right.
But it just seems, you would think, if it was Peel, people there would know it was him.
Right.
Like, they saw him on this boat. He was going right. back and forth. Then the boat was on fire. Blah, blah, blah. Like, it's not like he was just some unknown person.
Plus, if he had, let's say, probably grown up with the family,
mm-hmm.
since he dated Mark's sister at yeah. some point, I don't know that he could kill
yeah.
Mark's wife and their two small children.
His pregnant
and,
wife.
Yeah, and he may have been aware that she was pregnant.
Right.
I don't know if, I mean, if he, I mean, people have done that. Obviously, people have killed their own parents, their own yeah. children, whatever. But I just wonder if, it just seems like it wouldn't, he wouldn't have been able to.
Right, because it would be more like family.
That. Yeah.
Of course, people kill family all the time.
They
so.
Do. That's true.
And if he's just really mad, mm-hmm. maybe he's drunk.
Right.
You never know.
Or if he was doing some kind of drugs or something. And there's also the possibility that if you think about all the fishermen and stuff,
mm-hmm.
they probably on the water with the sun like reflecting off the water, or they said it was kind of foggy the morning that they passed the guy on the skiff or whatever.
Yeah, but I don't really know about that timeline. So. Yeah,
but either way, like if they saw him with the sun in their eyes with whatever, then maybe they were like, ah, I think that was the Peel guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe it was another dude that had brown hair and tan skin and...
And wore glasses.
And, yeah, like...
Yeah.
It's still kind of a generic description.
Yeah, I mean, even with the complexion thing, it's like...
Yeah.
Like you said, people...
And
of course,
people who are on the water, they get kind of that weathered look. They have, you know...
But they did say he was, like, in his 20s, so they're like, yeah. he's young enough to look in his 20s.
Right.
I don't know. Part of me's like, Peel did it.
Yeah.
But I don't really know if him being mad that he wasn't
allowed to come back, yeah.
I just don't know that would have been the reason. I don't know.
It seems like he would have known them well enough to know if they had, like, a lot of money on board or anything right. like that, so.
And I think in their investigations back in Blaine, Washington, they would have figured out if, like, Mark was into something that he shouldn't have been in.
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
To where, like, maybe... like John would have been like part
something.
Of that
yeah.
and then
right.
mad that he wasn't in on it anymore or something like that.
Yeah, that's confusing.
Otherwise,
hope that
it's
he would...
so random. It's mm-hmm. too personal not to be someone that knew them.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
I'm thinking.
I don't know that
it was
John Peel.
If it was
but...
at night, if it was a stranger, then they wouldn't have been able to recognize him, and there's no reason to kill everybody.
Right.
Including the little kids. And then, if they did recognize him, it's at night.
And that makes you think, okay, if he kills them and then he's like, you know, it's going to sink.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like, did he think that people would know it was him? Do you know what
right.
I'm asking?
Yeah.
Like... okay, I'm shooting them, and then I'm going to let it sink so they can't get to the bodies, really. Because it's
right.
1982. I'm still
yeah.
thinking about, like, our technology, but 1982.
Yeah. And depending on how deep the water is, it might
It's like,
yeah.
would they think, oh...
And it would destroy evidence just as well as a fire.
Right.
Water
but I wonder
lot,
if the person who did it was like, oh my gosh, they'll know it's me, so I have to...
Yeah. Try to cover up
right.
that it was that they were shot first.
And then
something.
It was like, oh, it didn't sink, now I have to catch it on fire kind of thing. And
yeah.
And they were just like, ah, I gotta go do it. And that's why they did it in the daylight instead of waiting
right.
for nighttime or whatever.
Yeah.
Because most people were going to be in bed at night.
Well, and they knew because everybody was watching the fire burning. Like,
yeah.
So
it's a spectacle.
Yeah. Like, after a while, people would have noticed if this big fishing boat just sat there for a while.
Especially Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
Can't forget it's a holiday weekend, so there might have been even more people there than there normally would have been on a regular weekend, even in season.
Right.
But with it being Labor Day, you have families.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's, you know, it's a fishing village, but
yeah,
still.
But everybody's kind of wrapping up for winter and stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
Or, except for, like, the hardcore people. But...
Right. I don't know. So. It's just strange because it's so, like.
It's such, like we were saying, it's such an extreme reaction
extreme.
To something.
And personal.
Yeah,
it seems so personal
yeah.
to me.
Especially to kill his whole family. And then, you know, these four kids. I mean, they were teenagers,
yeah.
but they were kids. You
they
know?
Were kids.
Yeah.
That, you know, other than that one kid who was his cousin, mm-hmm. not related to the family.
Right. And then, I mean, I guess once he was like, if they came there to kill Mark, maybe they weren't expecting that many people to be on the boat.
And I can't remember which one, but one of them had only gotten the job the week before.
Oh my gosh.
I can't remember. It wasn't the cousin, but it was one of them, I think. Right.
Yeah. I wonder if it was the 17-year-old. Possibly. Since we aren't sure where he was from.
Maybe. That would make kind of sense.
That's sad, though.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, I don't know. Whatever you... Thoughts, guys? What are your thoughts? Yeah. What are you thinking?
And y'all can email us at triggerwarning411@gmail.com. We also now have a Facebook page up.
Woo!
It's listed as TW Podcast, and it is just Facebook right now. We'll do more with it as we go, but
look for our little vulture.
Yeah, look for our little vulture mascot guy.
He's real cute.
Yeah.
He is. He's a skeleton vulture, guys.
Famous now.
That way you know you got the right one.
Yeah. And I guess that's it. So y'all will get a bonus episode this coming Sunday with the Alaska Hauntings.
I can't wait.
Spoopy. And we will talk with you guys later then, I guess.
Talk to you friends later.
Okay, bye friends.
Watch for deer.